Last week, we also were taking a closer look at Jesus, and we're taking a few weeks just to look at who is Jesus, who is this? And we saw a couple of things about Jesus that were there in the readings that were very, very interesting, I thought. I hope you did too. For example, we saw that he's much more than we usually picture him to be. We took a close look at it, and it was just a list of names and revelation that were astounding. We often don't think of Jesus in those terms, and yet there they were, just like that. And if you had a chance to think about that during the week, you might have seen that we have this tendency to domesticate Jesus. And when we domesticate him, then we can more easily deal with him. And you have to do that. That's part of the liturgy. You learn it. You pray that way. Even if you can't think of what to pray, you have liturgical forms. Nonetheless, it's not that we domesticate Jesus. He leads us. He forms us. We're clay in his hands, formed as he would choose to form us. And that's not always easy for us to do. It's not always comfortable. We also saw this, which we're going to concentrate on today, increase of the ministry, which is very important to us here. Increase of the ministry belongs to him. It comes from him. It's all his. In fact, we saw everything is about Jesus, always, all the time. All of it. Anything you can think of, Jesus is the Lord of it. And when it comes to the increase of the ministry, the growth of things that are going on, that comes directly from him by his choice and what he chooses to share with us. I don't know about you, but I would much prefer to say, well, God, you know, I have a seminary degree here and I've done all of this. Look at my resume. And I think if I did this, things should really take off nicely. Don't you agree, God? That's my preference. However, Jesus has another thing in mind altogether. And it is that all ministry is his, and the ministry that we carry out is what he has shared with us from himself. He just gives us a portion. And he says, this is for you. This is who you are. And for some of us, we're quite apostolic. Some of us in this room. And there's an apostolic gifting that he has shared with some of us, where you just love to start new things. Finishing them is a different story, but you just love to start new things. That's one of the signs of it. I want to look at this more directly today for a couple of reasons. It's very important to me personally to grow in the kind of life in which Jesus is the one who gives me the things to do on his behalf, instead of me thinking of things to do for Jesus and asking him to bless it. And it's important to me for a couple of things at this point in my life. I didn't come here. We didn't, my wife and I, of course she's not quite here yet, but I didn't move here as another step in a career, an ecclesiastical career. Or to do something I've never done in the church before. That would be great, but it's not my motivation. What I want, above all else, is to know Jesus more than I ever have, together with you. And that we can grow stronger together in the knowledge of Christ. To know him. And to know Christ crucified. And know the power of his resurrection, and to move towards that to which he has called us, because it's come from him. That's what I want. As we see more of him together, we'll find that. We'll find more of him. We'll see more of him together than we will individually. And it can be very tempting to, you know, I have my relationship with Jesus, and I come to church, and that gets underlined, and that's it. But I don't think that's the case here at St. Francis. I think this community is powerful and strong because of seeing Jesus through each other. And that can, as that increases, we'll have more strength and more grace. I also am interested in it because, as I'm underlining, the way the church is built and grows is to know Jesus more. The more you know of him, the more you share of what he does. In fact, Jesus says at one point, I will build my church. Okay. That's fine. I spent a lot of years in ministry thinking, I'll build the church, and some of the better members will become, you know, excellent Christians and disciples. Gosh, one or two of them might even get ordained. Who knows? And that'll be it. And that's really not the pattern of the New Testament. The pattern is Jesus builds the church. And together, we help each other become the disciples he would desire for us to be. He's called us to be. So, with those things in mind, just a couple of minutes on this section from John 21. And there's two parts, basically, an awful lot in there, but just two parts I'm going to look at. The first is John 21:6. Jesus says to them, cast the net on the right side of the boat, and you will find some fish. This scene's intrigued me for years. There they are. It's after the resurrection. Jesus has already appeared to them twice, but there's not much going on otherwise. That's probably good. Unless Jesus shows up, there might not be too much going on. And that's what we want. Nonetheless, here they are, and they're kind of bored. They've been around with Jesus for these years, seen all these miracles. Now it's all different, and they're kind of there on the beach or wherever they are when you're a fisherman who's not doing any fishing. And Peter, who is always the most impatient, said, that's it, I'm going fishing. And they all said, okay, well, can we come? Because there's nothing else going on. So all they go out, spend all night doing what they've done all their lives, making a living at fishing. And they've done it. They've done it well. They've been able to do it probably for generations. And they catch nothing. Just absolutely nothing. Now Jesus, as you will remember, was a carpenter who gave it up to become a preacher. And here he is. He's on the shoreline, and he's calling out to these professional fishermen who've fished all night and caught nothing. They know the condition of the sea, and he calls out to them, drop it on the right side of the boat right now, and you'll catch something. I would have been offended. And they probably were. It's not in the biblical record, but I'm just guessing they're thinking, this guy's still as annoying as he ever was. Oh. Sometimes when you work in the church for a long time, you can have the same feelings. Sometimes when you carried it a while and you feel like no one else has been carrying, you can have the same feelings. Especially when Jesus comes along and says, I've seen what you've been doing. Just try it again right over here. Go ahead. Now they got past this offense fairly quickly. And they joined him on the shore. Peter, thank God, puts his clothes on and goes to the shore and join. They all join in. They drag in the fish. And they caught it. I don't know. I really don't know what the story is. There's some scholars who would say this is the case. I'm kind of attracted to the case. How did those fish get there? Did Jesus create that school of fish? He's the creator. The very plausible explanation as to why they weren't there before. But I don't know. I mean, he knew it, and there they were. So Yeah, gathered the fish from the four corners of that sea. That could be, yeah. Right. Right. This is, yeah, fish is going to be a great Bible story. Come on. Right. Right. Yeah, that could be. That could really be. I don't know. But nonetheless, he did it. He created the opportunity. He released them into that work, and they were able to do it, even though they were already experts at it. Couldn't do it on their own power. So there they are. Now they're on the beach with Jesus, having breakfast. And he takes Peter aside. That's always going to be trouble, usually for Peter. I mean, Peter's always in trouble anyway. This is the one who cut the guy's ear off. You remember that one? Yeah. And then Jesus, in another annoying incident, heals him, puts the ear back on right away. He's always after Peter. And here, this is no exception. So Jesus goes to Peter three times and says, "Do you love me?" Now he's restoring him from the three times that Peter denied him. You probably heard that and seen that. There's a couple of things in that. Jesus did not hold that against Peter. He did not say, "Peter, you're going to have to make this up to me three times. I told you you were going to do it. You didn't listen to me, and it's going to cost you." He didn't say that at all. He didn't hold it against him for a minute. He forgave him and equipped him to move on. Well, how did he do that? "Do you love me?" Peter says, "Yes, you know that I do. Feed my sheep." Now there's a few different, "feed my lambs," a couple of different things, which we'll get into at some other time. See, what happens is this. When Jesus speaks to you, he's creating within you a capacity that you did not have before. So when Jesus is speaking to Peter, "Feed my sheep," he's creating within Peter a capacity to do the work of ministry that he did not have before. Do you remember how God created the world? Yeah, he spoke. God said, "Let there be such and such," and there was. When God speaks to you, there's a creation going on within you that wasn't there before. When God says to you, "Worship me," there's a creation of an ability to worship that was not there before. Let me give you a kind of a smaller example, one that would be in everyday life. Let's suppose that you buy groceries on the same day, at the same time, in the same place, and you see the same people working there. And usually you go to the same checkout counter, and the same person is there at that time because that's their shift. And let's say in this particular place, that employee says, "Would you like to add $1 or $2 for whatever the cause may be? Cancer research." Let's say cancer research. And immediately something comes to your mind. Maybe it's something like this. Ask her or him if they know someone who has cancer. So you might say, "Yes, I'd like to do that. And by the way, do you know someone who has cancer? Is this a little more personally important for you than being an employee?" See, God dropped that in your mind. And you follow up on it. You now have a capacity to go take a personal step with that person that you didn't have before. Now, who knows what they'll say? I'm guessing they're going to say, "Yes, I do." Then you can respond. You keep leaning on God. You listen in two levels. You listen to what the person saying. You're leaning on the Spirit of God, and you might hear the Spirit of God say, "Offer to pray." So you might say, "Well, you know, I pray every morning," or whenever you do it. "I pray every day, and would it be all right to pray for you or your friend every day for a little while?" That's how Jesus creates and gives away ministry to us. That's what he did with the disciples, catching that large school of fish. That's what he created within Peter when he said, "Feed my lamb." Now, if you did that at the checkout counter and you didn't know the Spirit of God was doing this, it wasn't popping in your heart or your mind or whatever, however it may work for you, you might be chatting with store security later instead of the person. It just might not work. See, God creates the capacity. Well, you get the idea. That's how it works, and it can be in very little everyday ways as well as large ways. The primary, most foundational piece of preparation for any work God wants you to do is to love Him. Don't tell anybody, but you don't need a seminary degree to love Him. Don't let that get out. You know that you have received teaching, that you have encountered Jesus, that something has gone on where you've taken a step of growth as a Christian because you love Him more than you did yesterday. That's the sign. And when you love Him more than you did yesterday, you are more prepared for ministry, whatever it may be that Jesus gives you, than you were yesterday. Because it's all His. All of it is His. That He wishes to share it with us. Now, let me just underline this with one final point. Why would Jesus expect you to love Him? And He says to Peter, do you love me? And that's how he gets the preparation. Well, why? Why that? It's because His love for you is beyond anything. It is stronger than anything. Nothing will separate you from the love of God in Jesus Christ. Absolutely nothing. Not death, not difficulty, not problems, not successes. Not even your own sinful little vices will separate you from the love of God. Or maybe some big ones. They will not separate you from the love of God. Nothing will. So when you love Him, you are connecting to that power that extends His kingdom wherever you are. Please keep studying the Bible, please keep praying and all this. But the primary foundation is returning the love of God. We love Him because He first loved us. It's not that you become good enough and then He'll love you, or you get the right answers, or you pass the Bible drill, or whatever it may be, and then you're ready to go. He loves you right now. And will create within you things you had never dreamed of. And you become like Him. I'm going to show you one final thing, and this is the result of what happens. Vestry equipped me with this iPhone, which is great, so that you can call me at any time. By the way, I have another number. I'll give you that at the end. This also becomes a personal Wi-Fi hotspot. You press the thing, you turn it on. And you can, you have, wherever you are, you can get on the Wi-Fi. You, because of the love of Jesus, and you taking it in and returning your love to Him, anywhere you go, grocery checkout counter, anywhere, you are a kingdom hotspot. I'll remind you of that in the weeks to come, but that's how it works. You don't have to remember the verse to be a kingdom hotspot. You just love Jesus. Then that's what you become. Now, Last week I asked you to do a couple things. One was ask God, what are you trying to tell me? And when you started to get a handle on that, then ask God, what do you want me to do about that? If you could refine that just a little bit this week and ask God, what are you trying to tell me about what you want me to do? And it'll be either in worship or fellowship or outreach, up, in, or out. It'll be one of those three. And if you do that over time, you will have a balanced triangle as the shape of your life as a Christian. Maybe you ask him, God, what do you want me to do about what you want me to do? What are you telling me about that? And then the second question is, how do you want me to do that? And just run with it. You're allowed to make a mistake. It's okay if it doesn't work. One of the things about the tests of the Lord, some of you know this very well, you can't flunk a test the Lord gives you. You just take it until you pass. Part of the way he loves you, right? Let's stand. Lord Jesus, we thank you that you love us above all, and nothing can take that from us. Nothing separates us from you. We bless you and praise you for that. It is above all others. And we ask you today, let us be the kingdom hotspot you want us to be. Fill us with that love for you that to such a degree it spills over to others. Whether they are like us or not, whether they're our enemies or not, we want to be like you. We ask that for the glory of your name. Amen.